Well, nanotechnology promises to be maybe the most important invention since electricity in the internal combustion engine. It's really fantastic. I should say at the outset, my wife works in the College of Engineering at the University of Wisconsin in Madison as an information specialist and has a chance to work with people who are involved in nanotechnology. And I tell you what, they're doing a lot of amazing things. But according to Consumer Reports, some applications could pose risks to health and the environment. And we know that nanomaterials are already being used in consumer products like car wax, computer chips, and sunscreens. But the risks of nanotechnology have not been as explored as they should be, and government and industry monitoring has been fairly minimal. So we're going to talk about that today with Andrea Rock. Andrea is senior editor for Consumer Reports magazine, and the July issue of Consumer Reports contains an article that says more testing and regulation is needed for nanotechnology. And we're welcoming her to the microphones today. She's with us by phone. And you can join in with your own questions or comments as we move along here. And if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. And Andrea Rock, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks. Glad to be here.
Appreciate it very much. Maybe, you know, I know just based on my wife's work in engineering that there's a fair amount of confusion about nanotechnology. And maybe you could define or what is exactly nanotechnology?
Sure. Nanomaterials are materials that are can be as small in size as a nanometer. And to give you a sense of how small that is, it's about 1/100,000th the width of a human hair.
So, amazing.
Right. It's about 10,000 times smaller than anything you can see with the naked eye. So, you know, we're not talking, you know, Apple nano music devices or anything. So nanoparticles have existed in nature, you know, in things like salt spray from the ocean and, you know, dust from volcanic eruptions, that sort of thing. And we have, for years, inadvertently created nanopollutants in things like welding fumes and diesel exhaust. But what's new is that really just since, you know, over the past couple of decades, we've been able, scientists using powerful microscopes and other kinds of tools can artificially create a whole vast array of new nanoparticles that really never existed before. And that creates wonderful potential for products and things that materials that can do things that weren't feasible before, but it also creates potential for new risks that have to be addressed.
Yeah. Why is something so small able to do good or harm?
Well, there are two main reasons. One is that when you reduce materials to sizes as small as a nanometer, there's more relative surface area for that material, which makes it more reactive with all kinds of other materials, including human tissue. So that creates the potential for problems in a health sense. Also, at that scale, the physical properties can change because the material becomes quantum physics applies at mm-hmm. that scale, which means you can have completely, like carbon becomes 100 times stronger than steel, aluminum becomes explosive, and gold can melt at room temperature. So it's almost like it's a completely different material in many ways and needs to have different kinds of risk assessment rather than using just the standards that you use for the same material at macro scale.
Yeah. It has some great potential, but it obviously has some potential health risks associated with it. And I know Consumer Reports did a study of, 19 sunscreens, I believe, in your July issue. Talk a little bit about that. How many of them listed zinc oxide or titanium oxide in the label, which would indicate, I believe, the presence of nanoparticles?
Well, any of the products that did list zinc or titanium dioxide on the label, you know, when we test them, of the eight products that we tested for nanoparticles, all did contain them. And only one actually identified the materials as nanoscale on the label. So they're used, those ingredients are used in nanosize because it tends to make them transparent. So that's the advantage for them. And the problem is that there hasn't been adequate evaluation of what health risks, if any, there may be by reducing them to that size. So
yeah.
That's why we had been advocating having that kind of evaluation and also labeling when something does contain material at a nanoscale.
Talking about the potential benefits and possible health and environmental risks of nanotechnology with Andrea Rock, senior editor at Consumer Reports magazine. If you'd like to join in with your questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Give us a call or send us an email. We'll be glad to respond to you. So let's talk a little bit before we go to the phones here about how nano delivery systems are being used. But what about health and medicine?
That's where a lot of potential is seen. What's possible to do and some of these things are already actually in clinical trials. For instance, one company that is doing testing a treatment that uses gold nanoparticles as kind of Trojan horses to deposit very strong anti-cancer drugs directly into tumor cells. And by doing it that way, it allows a very powerful drug to be used with, you know, without the kind of side effects that you would see at larger scale. So that's using nanoparticles as a drug delivery system within the body is one of the promising applications. Also in environmental, both in terms of cleaner energy sources and cleaning up damage that's already been done to the environment, science offers a lot of potential benefits, including already, you know, in the works. I mean, solar cells that can be produced at about one-tenth the cost of conventional solar cells, and that really makes it a lot more competitive with existing energy sources and other kinds of uses of nanomaterials to desalinate seawater and have more effective, cost-effective light-emitting ceilings and walls to reduce energy. So, you know, there's a lot of potential good as long as we do the kind of risk evaluation ahead of time that makes sure we aren't doing some harm in the process.
Sure. Well, let's talk to Marion Fenimore next. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I didn't quite hear all of the last little bit that she was talking about, and yet what she was saying makes me, okay, my question's probably stupid.
Well, maybe not.
However, in the beginning, she was talking about anything that has zinc oxide. And when I think of zinc oxide, I had children who were very sensitive when they were babies, and I use zinc oxide on their little bottoms lavishly,
sure.
A lot. And now, is products like, I mean, that was 30 plus years ago.
The zinc oxide that you see, that's that thick white,
yeah,
that lifeguards used to have on their nose, or that's,
yeah,
used in that kind of diaper cream. If it's not transparent, if it's that thick white stuff, that's not nanosized.
Okay. So that was no problem back,
correct,
then. And yet when I heard you talking then about using it in delivery for cancer drugs, it's like, no, I've had cancer twice. So that sounds exciting.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement about the potential for that. At this point, still in clinical trials, but that would be one of the areas that would hold a lot of promise.
Can you elaborate at all on what some of the clinical trials are, what medications are being used with them? Do you know?
The one that I was referring to with the gold nanoparticles it can deliver drugs for treatments of all kinds of solid tumors, not leukemia. They're testing it in various hard-to-treat cancers. It's a company called Cytimmune that is testing that one.
And we'll be back with Andrea Rock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking now about the potential benefits and possible health and environmental risks of nanotechnology with Andrea Rock. Andrea is senior editor for Consumer Reports magazine, and their July issue contains an article that says more testing and regulation is needed for nanotechnology. If you'd like to join in, we've got one or two open lines. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And Andrea Rock, the amount of the value of the goods worldwide expected to use nanotechnology by 2014 was an astounding figure that you had in your article.
Yeah, this is an incredible growth industry. By 2014, about $2.6 trillion worth of goods worldwide are expected to use nanotech, and that's up from about $50 billion last year. So it's big.
It is very big. Liz in Fish Creek, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Liz. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've been extremely concerned about this for years already. I'm amazed that it so insidiously moved into the body products market.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one of the first places we started using it is in sun care, because it allowed the companies to move away from using the chemicals that we didn't want to be using and go back to using zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, because people don't want to be white.
Right.
They would, you know, turn them into something that would reduce the particle size. Unfortunately, this is a pharmaceutical delivery system, and to take something that will never be metabolized, such as a mineral, and bypass the body's own mechanisms of defense and protection, and therefore deliver it into our bodies, is amazing. But one of the first things I would like to see happen is for anything that has the word organic on any label, not be permitted to use any kind of a micronized ingredient. I know that there are companies that are promoting their organics a lot and certifying themselves as organic and not describing it as micronized. It doesn't have to be disclosed, but they often boast having encapsulated cranberry oil or something like that. I read that yesterday. I'm so concerned about it. And, you know, they don't have to tell you that that is being used. And so at this point, I'm afraid to buy really anything in the marketplace. I make most of my own things as a consequence. And I'm wondering if there's any effort that you know out there to compel companies to disclose that it's a micronized ingredient,
there was a petition filed. One of the first steps is just to get the FDA and some of the other regulatory agencies to recognize that these kind of ingredients can't be considered equivalent to macro scale and that need to be evaluated as essentially new chemicals. So there are efforts on that front to try to make that happen, and Consumers Union and some other consumer groups have been pushing for mandatory labeling and so far have not gotten too far in that effort. There's a lot of resistance.
For us on how we might go about helping to compel the FDA or some regulatory agency to force this, because I'm extremely concerned, and I think the more you learn about it, the more worried you get.
In the article, we've suggested that people who are concerned and want to speak out about it can contact the FDA directly, but there's also a couple other groups, the Wilson Center and the International Council on Nanotechnology are both, you know, kind of independent groups that are trying to promote responsible use of the technology. So those are potential ways. www.consumersunion.org is another source to, you know, file some, if you agree with the effort to try to promote labeling. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Liz, thank you. Appreciate the call. Scott in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Scott. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. I'm going to apologize if I'm repeating something said earlier. I came in partway through the discussion here.
Mm-hmm.
I work in corporate research for a specialty chemical company, and we've taken a lot of look from a material science aspect of employing nanotechnology in some of our products and nanoscience-engineered materials. Speaking from not a consumer standpoint, but from a corporate standpoint, our biggest hurdle and issues with bringing a lot of these materials in are simply that we cannot guarantee that we can meet a lot of the regulatory issues and requirements that come along with the markets that we deal with. A lot of that stems from the fact that because our understandings of particle interactions and chemistry frequently is based on a model that only really works at a macro scale, and
mm-hmm.
once you start talking nanoscience, you're dealing on a scale where the models just don't really apply anymore. There's too many factors, too many parts of the equation, too many variables that we simply don't know, don't recognize, or don't have enough information about to really accurately predict what's going to happen. And because we can't say with any real degree of control what's going to happen, whether we can meet some of these regulatory requirements, whether we can talk about particle motility or anything like that, we really shy away from using them in a lot of areas. And it may well benefit us in the long run to be able to employ these, but to make sure that we are obeying the letter of the law and to make sure that we're not endangering our markets and our customers and the end consumer, we really find ourselves hesitating a lot to venture into this until there's a lot more understanding known at the quantum level of what's going on.
Exactly. And that's great to hear that, you know, you're a company that's taking that approach. And this is a tremendous opportunity for us to get it right, you know, and not repeat mistakes of the past with lead and asbestos and that sort of thing. So there are groups that are really working on trying to come up with models for, you know, how do you prioritize how we can evaluate risk and come up with some kind of regulatory structure that works. The Wilson Center, which I'd mentioned before, their nanotechnology project is involved in that, and also the International Council on Nanotechnology. But hopefully those kind of efforts that involve industry, government, and, you know, academics and consumer groups can work.
Yeah. Scott, thank you very much for calling. And I suppose when it comes to testing or research on this, we would kind of have to fall back on the typical kinds of testing we've done in the past, or maybe we have to do some different kinds of testing to check out health concerns.
Right. That's really what has to happen, and that's what some of these research groups are looking at, is how do we evaluate what are the things that are most likely, since doing a full range of extensive testing on every single nanomaterial isn't possible, how do you assess which are the ones that are most likely to cause harm, and is there a model for doing that? And currently, what seems to be of most concern from a health standpoint are carbon nanotubes, which
yeah.
have some similar
fibrous shapes, don't they, to
yes.
asbestos?
Right, and there's some concern that they may have some effects on the body akin to asbestos. There's been some conflicting evidence about that, but there is enough cause for concern in terms of animal studies showing very rapid lung damage when mice are exposed to the equivalent of what would be the workplace level for that. That gives cause for concern. The other very widely used form of nanomaterial currently in growing is nanosilver, and that's promoted for antibacterial properties. There are refrigerators being sold, particularly in Asia, with silver-coated interiors. There are Band-Aids and bandages here in the U.S. using that. And while there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence about, you know, health hazards for humans in that way, there is concern about environmental impact as more and more of this nanoscale silver ends up in our wastewater and in the water stream because it can be toxic to aquatic life.
Okay, so lots of work yet to be done. Harrison in Bristol, we'll turn to you. Hi, Harrison.
Hi. My question also was about a nanometal that I had, nanogold.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard a couple of years ago, I think Rice University or something in Texas was encapsulating it with gold and injecting it into mice and attaching that to some kind of cancer antibody that would find little cancer cells in the mice, and then they would... what I heard was they would put the mice in infrared, and it would kill off the cancer. Are you familiar with anything like that?
Yeah, there was some work going on with that by a company in Germany also, yeah. Gold nanoparticles seem to be among the most common that are being tested as, you know, drug delivery, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you say a gold nanoparticle, is this literally a... It's hard to say sliver because it's much smaller than slivers of actual gold.
Yes, yes, it is.
And just to,
you know, if there's any testing, you know, like, you know, is that a technology that you think, have you heard of it working at all? Or
well, there was based on the clinical trials that are being done both here and in Germany, the initial results are that they have had. Good results. Now, you know, what the long-term effects are, you know, still unknown, but in terms of it being effective in delivering the drug directly to tumor cells and not harming healthy cells, it does seem to be, you know, effective based on early clinical trial results.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And David in Ironwood, Michigan, we'll turn to you next. Hi, David. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, my main concern is what they brought up is labeling. I mean, it will help mm-hmm. the industry, too. I mean, if they label it and people know it, and they find out it's good, the word would spread and it becomes use a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do have problems, they could narrow it down quicker, too.
Right.
People have to know what's in these products.
Exactly. It's just a matter of informed consent. The consumers know what they're buying, and... As you say, if there is a problem, it also makes it traceable for public health officials to try to identify a problem more quickly. And if there are great benefits, I mean, certainly in Asia, it's seen as a real plus to have nano on the label. I mean, there's all kinds of nano labeling going on over there mm-hmm. because it's used as a way to tout a product as being really high tech.
Thanks for calling, David. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls here. You can join in, by the way. We have a couple open lines. We'll get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's turn to Lauren in Phillips next. Lauren, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, our elements are made of atoms, and atoms make up molecules. How does a nanoparticle compare to an atom or a molecule?
Much smaller. working well. The strict definition is that a nanoparticle is, as I had said, if you're gauging it in size, about 100 thousandths the width of a human hair. So a nanomaterial has to be a nanometer or smaller. And that's why it wasn't really possible until they had the kind of microscopes where we could even see material at that scale and then actually manipulate it that we were able to create these new materials and use them for commercial purposes. It's possible, for instance, with molecular ink that's nanoscale ink, that you can encode millions of pages of information in a square inch. So... it can be used for, actually they're using that for combating counterfeit drugs, you know, as a way of, you know, coding drugs and fighting that problem.
Oh, well, you need a pretty specialized tweezer to be able to pick one of those up and move it around.
Exactly. exactly.
But they do it. But they do it.
Yes.
Lauren, thanks. Lacey and Kokana, your turn. Hi, Lacey.
Hi. I just have a question about this nanoparticles. My mother has had cancer 4 times in 3 years, and she does a treatment that isn't accepted by insurance companies. I'm not going to say where she goes, but she has an insulin or a steroid type chemical pumped into her body, and it opens up the cancer cells, and then the radioactive material attacks just those cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a type of nanomaterial, or is that something that has to do with that gold particles you were talking about?
Well, I would be surprised unless I think it's probably something different. I would be surprised unless she were participating actually in a clinical trial, which it doesn't sound is the case, that it would be something involving nanoparticles.
So probably not. If it was associated with, let's say, a university hospital, for example, or something like that, it could be possible that it's part of a clinical trial.
But no, it's not. It's a
company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's being investigated and looked into because it's not accepted in the United States, but he brings it here. But my mom happened to find him. So I was just wondering if that was part of it, because it kind of worries me, but she doesn't tell me what she does.
That's a whole different show in some ways, and in other ways not. But if I were you, Lacey, I'd be doing all I could to find out more about this, and I'd be asking other experts or not unbiased researchers about it before I went a lot further with it. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Donald in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi. I wanted to contribute some information that I didn't hear. I didn't hear the whole show, but here in Madison at the University of Wisconsin this summer, my wife participated in a research project in which the concept was to find out if waste from nano pharmaceuticals or any use of nanoparticles going into the groundwater or into the water supply would go into plant roots through the process of all that, and come back up through the plants and then be eaten by animals or by people. And then if people eat the animal products, would the nano travel? And because they're so small, the possibility of them traveling in a negative way, they were checking this effect. And it was fascinating to me, being a non-scientist and my wife being a scientist, coming home and talking about these things and the experiments they're doing. So I guess, CU ought to know that, these things are being worked on, in the scientific field at least at the University of Wisconsin in Madison and probably elsewhere, to try and find out if there is a danger in using these and what the possible traveling consequences might be in the longest of long runs.
That's great. Actually, one of the researchers there at University of Wisconsin-Madison was a great source for me on the story. You guys are doing wonderful work out there, and particularly in this arena.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. I appreciate the call.
Oh, I'm glad I did. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling and adding that in. And it is good to know that there's a lot of research going on, but I guess more could be done. I think the amount of money spent on research, you point that out.
Yeah, the big push, and the reason there's so much commercialization in such a quick period of time is because of a big push in terms of federal funding for nanotech, but most of that money is going toward research and development that leads to commercialization rather than risk research. Of the $1 billion that the federal government spends, no more than 4% is going to risk and safety assessment.
Yeah, so that's I'm going to do the math on that in my head, but that's a pretty small amount compared to the $1 billion.
Right.
Well, what kinds of things are is Consumers Union and Consumer Reports advocating in terms of testing and so forth? Go through that with us.
We've made some very specific recommendations that the FDA in particular needs to kind of reevaluate its procedures since it's responsible for assessing safety information on nano ingredients in cosmetics, food, and supplements and drugs before they're sold. So we were recommending that they have special standards to look at nano ingredients in those kind of products that are used directly on or in the body, and that manufacturers also should be required to report health product problems linked to those ingredients to the FDA. We were also calling for making labeling mandatory, as we were discussing earlier, and also providing more funds for risk research to those agencies in charge of regulation, FDA, the EPA, Consumer Product Safety Commission, and so on.
And will Consumer Reports magazine be following up? And it's an interesting article, certainly, in your July issue. Do you intend to do more things down the road on this?
Yes. I mean, since we're more on the subject in general, and also since so much of what we do involves testing consumer products, and this is increasingly becoming an issue with all kinds of consumer products, we have plans to continue to test as part of our normal testing, to start looking at nano as part of our testing protocol.
You know, and tomorrow on one of the guests on tomorrow's show is Dr. Perry Robbins, president of the Skin Cancer Foundation, will be talking with us about smart tips for seniors. And I think we'll have to be sure to bring up this issue of the nano particles in sunscreens and see what he has to say. Dr. Robbins has to say about that as well.
Great. Yeah, it's an area that needs more research hopefully another part of that message will be that people should look at getting full spectrum, not just the SPF, but protection from UVA radiation. That's another issue that we've been kind of focusing on.
And Andrea, in addition to the magazine, which of course people can subscribe to, you have a website too that people can go to.
Right, consumerreports.org, and you'll find more information there. Just if you type in nanotechnology.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, Andrea. Thank you very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Andrea Rock is senior editor for Consumer Reports magazine. And as I mentioned, their July issue of Consumer Reports contains the article we've been really discussing today, which advocates for more testing and regulation needed in the area of nanotechnology. It's, as she said, about $2.6 trillion worth of goods worldwide are expected to be to use nanotechnology by 2014. Amazing figure. Coming up tomorrow, I did mention that Dr. Perry Robbins will be with us, president of the Skin Cancer Foundation, to talk about sun smart tips for seniors. But also at 11 o'clock, actually, we'll have a visit from Jim Lattice of the UW Space Place in Madison and Tom Hall of Eagle Optics in Middleton. Thanks for being with us. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.